Chapter 6. Æthelstan, the son of Edward the Elder, succeeded that king. He reigned only 15 years, but he remembered the glory of his grandfather, the great Alfred, and governed England well. He reduced the turbulent people of Wales, and obliged them to pay him a tribute in money, and in cattle, and to send him their best hawks and hounds. He was victorious over the Cornish men, who were not yet quite under the Saxon government. He restored such of the old laws as were good, and had fallen into disuse, made some wise new laws, and took care of the poor and weak. A strong alliance, made against him by Anlaf, a Danish prince, Constantine king of the Scots, and the people of North Wales, he broke and defeated in one great battle, long famous for the vast numbers slain in it. After that, he had a quiet reign. The lords and ladies about him had leisure to become polite and agreeable, and foreign princes were glad, as they have sometimes been since, to come to England on visits to the English court. When Æthelstan died, at 47 years old, his brother Edmund, who was only 18, became king. He was the first of 6 boy kings, as you will presently know. They called him the Magnificent, because he showed a taste for improvement and refinement. But he was beset by the Danes, and had a short and troubled reign, which came to a troubled end. One night, when he was feasting in his hall, and had eaten much and drunk deep, he saw, among the company, a noted robber named Leif, who had been banished from England. Made very angry by the boldness of this man, the king turned to his cupbearer, and said, "There is a robber sitting at the table yonder, who, for his crimes, is an outlaw in the land, a hunted wolf, whose life any man may take, at any time. Command that robber to depart." "I will not depart." said Leif. "No?" cried the king. "No, by the Lord." said Leif. Upon that the king rose from his seat, and, making passionately at the robber, and seizing him by his long hair, tried to throw him down. But the robber had a dagger underneath his cloak, and, in the scuffle, stabbed the king to death. That done, he set his back against the wall, and fought so desperately, that although he was soon cut to pieces by the king's armed men, and the wall and pavement were splashed with his blood, yet it was not before he had killed, and wounded many of them. You may imagine what rough lives the kings of those times led, when one of them could struggle, half drunk, with a public robber in his own dining hall, and be stabbed in presence of the company who ate and drank with him. Then succeeded the boy King Edward, who was weak and sickly in body, but of a strong mind. And his armies fought the Northmen, the Danes, and Norwegians, or the Sea Kings, as they were called, and beat them for the time. And, in 9 years, Edward died, and passed away. Then came the boy King Edwy, 15 years of age. But the real king, who had the real power, was a monk named Dunstan, a clever priest, a little mad, and not a little proud and cruel. Dunstan was then abbot of Glastonbury Abbey, whither the body of King Edmund the Magnificent was carried, to be buried. While yet a boy, he had got out of his bed one night, being then in a fever, and walked about Glastonbury Church, when it was under repair, and, because he did not tumble off some scaffolds that were there, and break his neck, it was reported, that he had been shown over the building by an angel. He had also made a harp, that was said to play of itself, which it very likely did, as Aeolian harps, which are played by the wind, and are understood now, always do. For these wonders he had been once denounced by his enemies, who were jealous of his favor with the late King Æthelstan, as a magician, and he had been waylaid, bound hand and foot, and thrown into a marsh. But he got out again, somehow, to cause a great deal of trouble yet. The priests of those days were, generally, the only scholars. They were learned in many things. having to make their own convents and monasteries on uncultivated grounds that were granted to them by the crown, it was necessary that they should be good farmers and good gardeners, or their lands would have been too poor to support them. For the decoration of the chapels where they prayed, and for the comfort of the refectories where they ate and drank, it was necessary that there should be good carpenters, good smiths, good painters among them. For their greater safety in sickness and accident, living alone by themselves in solitary places, it was necessary that they should study the virtues of plants and herbs, and should know how to dress cuts, burns, scalds, and bruises, and how to set broken limbs. Accordingly, they taught themselves, and one another, a great variety of useful arts, and became skillful in agriculture, medicine, surgery, and handicraft. And when they wanted the aid of any little piece of machinery, which would be simple enough now, but was marvelous then, to impose a trick upon the poor peasants, they knew very well how to make it, and did make it many a time and often, I have no doubt. Dunstan, abbot of Glastonbury Abbey, was one of the most sagacious of these monks. He was an ingenious smith, and worked at a forge in a little cell. This cell was made too short to admit of his lying at full length, when he went to sleep, as if that did any good to anybody. And he used to tell the most extraordinary lies about demons and spirits, who, he said, came there to persecute him. For instance, he related that one day, when he was at work, the devil looked in at the little window, and tried to tempt him to lead a life of idle pleasure, whereupon, having his pincers in the fire, red hot, he seized the devil by the nose, and put him to such pain, that his bellowings were heard for miles and miles. Some people are inclined to think this nonsense a part of Dunstan's madness, for his head never quite recovered the fever, but I think not. I observe that it induced the ignorant people to consider him a holy man, and that it made him very powerful, which was exactly what he always wanted. On the day of the coronation of the handsome boy King Edwy, it was remarked by Odo, Archbishop of Canterbury, who was a Dane by birth, that the king quietly left the coronation feast, while all the company were there. Odo, much displeased, sent his friend Dunstan to seek him. Dunstan, finding him in the company of his beautiful young wife Olgiva, and her mother Etheljiva, a good and virtuous lady, not only grossly abused them, but dragged the young king back into the feasting hall by force. Some, again, think Dunstan did this, because the young king's fair wife was his own cousin, and the monks objected to people marrying their own cousins, but I believe he did it, because he was an imperious, audacious, ill-conditioned priest, who, having loved a young lady himself, before he became a sour monk, hated all love now, and everything belonging to it. The young king was quite old enough to feel this insult. Dunstan had been treasurer in the last reign, and he soon charged Dunstan with having taken some of the last king's money. The Glastonbury abbot fled to Belgium, very narrowly escaping some pursuers who were sent to put out his eyes, as you will wish they had, when he read what follows, and his abbey was given to priests who were married, whom he always, both before and afterwards, opposed. But he quickly conspired with his friend, Odo the Dane, to set up the king's young brother, Edgar, as his rival for the throne, and, not content with this revenge, he caused the beautiful Queen Olgiva, though a lovely girl of only 17 or 18, to be stolen from one of the royal palaces, branded in the cheek with a red-hot iron, and sold into slavery in Ireland. But the Irish people pitied and befriended her, and they said, "Let us restore the girl queen to the boy king, and make the young lovers happy." And they cured her of her cruel wound, and sent her home as beautiful as before. But the villain Dunstan, and that other villain, Odo, caused her to be waylaid at Gloucester as she was joyfully hurrying to join her husband, and to be hacked and hewn with swords, and to be barbarously maimed and lamed, and left to die. When Edwy the Fair, his people called him so, because he was so young and handsome, heard of her dreadful fate, he died of a broken heart. And so the pitiful story of the poor young wife and husband ends. Ah! Better to be two cottagers in these better times, than King and Queen of England in those bad days, though never so fair. Then came the boy king, Edgar, called the Peaceful, 15 years old. Dunstan, being still the real king, drove all married priests out of the monasteries and abbeys, and replaced them by solitary monks like himself, of the rigid order called the Benedictines. He made himself Archbishop of Canterbury, for his greater glory, and exercised such power over the neighboring British princes, and so collected them about the king, that once, when the king held his court at Chester, and went on the River Dee, to visit the monastery of St. John, the 8 oars of his boat were pulled, as the people used to delight in relating in stories and songs, by 8 crowned kings, and steered by the King of England. As Edgar was very obedient to Dunstan and the monks, they took great pains to represent him as the best of kings. But he was really profligate, debauched, and vicious. He once forcibly carried off a young lady from the convent at Wilton, and Dunstan, pretending to be very much shocked, condemned him not to wear his crown upon his head for 7 years, no great punishment, I dare say, as it can hardly have been a more comfortable ornament to wear than a stewpan without a handle. His marriage with his second wife, Ulfrida, is one of the worst events of his reign. Hearing of the beauty of this lady, he dispatched his favorite courtier, Athelwold, to her father's castle in Devonshire, to see if she were really as charming as fame reported. Now, she was so exceedingly beautiful, that Athelwold fell in love with her himself, and married her, but he told the king that she was only rich, not handsome. The king, suspecting the truth when they came home, resolved to pay the newly married couple a visit, and, suddenly, told Athelwold to prepare for his immediate coming. Athelwold, terrified, confessed to his young wife what he had said and done, and implored her to disguise her beauty by some ugly dress or silly manner, that he might be safe from the king's anger. She promised that she would, but she was a proud woman, who would far rather have been a queen than the wife of a courtier. She dressed herself in her best dress, and adorned herself with her richest jewels, and when the king came, presently, he discovered the cheat. So, he caused his false friend, Athelwold, to be murdered in a wood, and married his widow, this bad Ulfrida. 6 or 7 years afterwards, he died, and was buried, as if he had been all that the monks said he was, in the Abbey of Glastonbury, which here Dunstan for him had much enriched. England, in one part of this reign, was so troubled by wolves, which, driven out of the open country, hid themselves in the mountains of Wales, when they were not attacking travelers and animals, that the tribute payable by the Welsh people was forgiven them, on condition of their producing, every year, 300 wolves' heads. And the Welshmen were so sharp upon the wolves, to save their money, that in 4 years there was not a wolf left. Then came the boy king, Edward, called the martyr, from the manner of his death. Ulfrida had a son, named Ethelred, for whom she claimed the throne, but Dunstan did not choose to favor him, and he made Edward king. The boy was hunting one day, down in Dorsetshire, when he rode near to Corfe Castle, where Ulfrida and Ethelred lived. Wishing to see them kindly, he rode away from his attendants, and galloped to the castle gate, where he arrived at twilight, and blew his hunting horn. "You are welcome, dear king," apostrophe said Ulfrida, coming out, with her brightest smiles. "Pray you dismount and enter." "Apostrophe not so, dear madam," apostrophe said the king. "My company will miss me, and fear that I have met with some harm. Please you to give me a cup of wine, that I may drink here, in the saddle, to you and to my little brother, and so ride away with the good speed I have made in riding here." Apostrophe Ulfrida, going in to bring the wine, whispered an armed servant, one of her attendants, who stole out of the darkening gateway, and crept round behind the king's horse. As the king raised the cup to his lips, saying, "Health!" To the wicked woman who was smiling on him, and to his innocent brother whose hand she held in hers, and who was only 10 years old, this armed man made a spring, and stabbed him in the back. He dropped the cup, and spurred his horse away, but, soon fainting with loss of blood, dropped from the saddle, and, in his fall, entangled one of his feet in the stirrup. The frightened horse dashed on, trailing his rider's curls upon the ground, dragging his smooth young face through ruts, and stones, and briars, and fallen leaves, and mud, until the hunters, tracking the animal's course by the king's blood, caught his bridle, and released the disfigured body. Then came the sixth and last of the boy kings, Ethelred, whom Ulfrida, when he cried out at the sight of his murdered brother riding away from the castle gate, unmercifully beat with a torch which he snatched from one of the attendants. The people so disliked this boy, on account of his cruel mother, and the murder she had done to promote him, that Dunstan would not have had him for king, but would have made Aegitha, the daughter of the dead King Edgar, and of the lady whom he stole out of the convent at Wilton, Queen of England, if she would have consented. But she knew the stories of the youthful kings too well, and would not be persuaded from the convent, where she lived in peace. So, Dunstan put Ethelred on the throne, having no one else to put there, and gave him the nickname of the Unready, knowing that he wanted resolution and firmness. At first, Ulfrida possessed great influence over the young king, but, as he grew older, and came of age, her influence declined. The infamous woman, not having it in her power to do any more evil, then retired from court, and, according to the fashion of the time, built churches and monasteries to expiate her guilt. As if a church, with a steeple reaching to the very stars, would have been any sign of true repentance for the blood of the poor boy, whose murdered form was trailed at his horse's heels. As if she could have buried her wickedness beneath the senseless stones of the whole world, piled up one upon another, for the monks to live in. About the 9th or 10th year of this reign, Dunstan died. He was growing old then, but was as stern and artful as ever. Two circumstances that happened in connection with him, in this reign of Ethelred, made a great noise. Once, he was present at a meeting of the church, when the question was discussed, whether priests should have permission to marry, and, as he sat with his head hung down, apparently thinking about it, a voice seemed to come out of a crucifix in the room, and warned the meeting to be of his opinion. This was some juggling of Dunstan's, and was probably his own voice disguised. But he played off a worse juggle than that, soon afterwards. For, another meeting being held on the same subject, and he and his supporters being seated on one side of a great room, and their opponents on the other, he rose and said, "To Christ himself, as judge, do I commit this cause?" Immediately on these words being spoken, the floor where the opposite party sat gave way, and some were killed and many wounded. You may be pretty sure that it had been weakened under Dunstan's direction, and that it fell at Dunstan's signal. His part of the floor did not go down. No, no. He was too good a workman for that. When he died, the monks settled that he was a saint, and called him Saint Dunstan ever afterwards. They might just as well have settled that he was a coach horse, and could just as easily have called him one. Ethelred the Unready was glad enough, I dare say, to be rid of this holy saint, but, left to himself, he was a poor weak king, and his reign was a reign of defeat and shame. The restless Danes, led by Sweyn, a son of the King of Denmark who had quarreled with his father, and had been banished from home, again came into England, and, year after year, attacked and despoiled large towns. To coax these sea kings away, the weak Ethelred paid them money, but, the more money he paid, the more money the Danes wanted. At first, he gave them £10,000. On their next invasion, £16,000. On their next invasion, £24,000. To pay which large sums, the unfortunate English people were heavily taxed. But, as the Danes still came back and wanted more, he thought it would be a good plan to marry into some powerful foreign family that would help him with soldiers. So, in the year 1002, he courted and married Emma, the sister of Richard, Duke of Normandy, a lady who was called the Flower of Normandy. And now, a terrible deed was done in England, the like of which was never done on English ground before or since. On the 13th of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.